WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Happy Sunday, y'all. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone, and we are now in April.
We are. I mean, I feel like we just recorded not too long ago.
I know. It's like, wait a second. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, it's so crazy. It's pretty much the beginning of the month. I think that, it is April 3rd. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know, but how was your weekend?
It was very good. I didn't really do too much. Oh no, I went to Huntsville. That's right. And saw some family. It was my mom's birthday. Hung out, saw the other family, Jason's family, and so it was really good. What about yours?
It was good. You know, actually, we did. My husband and I, we went. Gosh, that was on Thursday, the 31st. We went to Birmingham. There mm-hmm. is a comedian that we went to see. His name is Nate Bargatze.
Okay.
Kind of like dry, not crass, mm-hmm. but like, you know, it's like stuff is always the funniest when it's like, oh my gosh, that is so true.
Yeah.
And so he is like that kind of comedian. And
I like
so,
that.
So
yeah.
Like a couple months ago, Terry sent me a text and it was just like a screenshot of like, hey, I ordered these tickets. And I'm like, did not even know this was happening.
Wow.
Like, you just earned yourself some brownie points.
Yeah.
But earlier that day, we took the kids to my parents' house in Fort Payne because my parents wanted to see them that weekend.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was like, can I just drop them off on Thursday then?
Yeah.
So that was good. So yeah.
Good. Well, I know last week we talked a lot about like kind of, you know, reevaluating goals and putting more of an emphasis and a more of an intention on, you know, what we're doing. And so I think this week, Sheena, you know, we were kind of talking like, what are we going to talk about? You know, because sometimes, I'm not going to lie, people, sometimes it gets, we've been going on the air for a long time and, you know, we kind of have similar topics that we discuss and there's always different takes and different guests that we have on, but we were kind of thinking about it and I don't think we've ever fully talked about mindfulness exercise and like exercise formats and intuitive and mindful eating.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've kind of alluded to it, but I don't think we've ever really talked about it or explained it. And I'm sure there's a lot of folks that are like, I don't even know what that means.
I agree. And, you know, I know that when we were preparing for this show, we definitely acknowledged that these two topic areas are mm-hmm. probably, I'm assuming, you know, are personal passions, like mm-hmm. within like our different niches, like because I feel like you are very much into mindfulness with mm-hmm. with yoga and movement, and then with the type of work that I like to do with students one-on-one and programming,
mm-hmm.
it is kind of getting away from that shift in diet culture where you're listening to all of these external mm-hmm. rules about eating and you're getting back to the basics of listening to your body.
Yeah.
And sometimes people don't know like what that feels like or what
yeah.
they should be looking for
or how to do it. And it's just, it's so interesting because we get it and mm-hmm. we can talk about it to other professionals and it's such a fun topic to me because it can go so in depth. And I'm a big like anatomy person. Like if you were to look at my YouTube feed, aside from like cultural food, you know, exploration, all that, it's like, you know, movements and how the body moves and muscle groups. And it's so intrinsic. And a lot of times when people are exercising or working out, they really just don't understand the movement principles of the body or the muscle groups that are working. And like, thankfully the machines that we have in the rec center, they actually tell you what muscle group you're working, but it's so surface. And it's, I like to go a little deeper as a Pilates instructor and a yoga instructor. I kind of like to think of it at a deeper level. Not that I'm going to go work out, but how is the body going to move efficiently so that when you age and get older, you're going to feel good. You're going to have like healthy joints and be mobile. So I don't know. I'm kind of excited. I think I'm going to give us a history lesson in our next segment just because I kind of like history. So I don't know. We might just go for it.
No, I'm excited thinking about that. And, you know, as you were talking about it, you know, I was thinking about past shows when we think about all of the different types of fitness. When,
mm-hmm.
when somebody talks about, you know, being physically fit and when we think about that flexibility and doing things like yoga and Pilates, I feel like there has been, I don't know if the word resurgence is appropriate, but mm-hmm. it's become more relevant and people are recognizing it for the importance that it has,
right.
especially with exercise programs mm-hmm. and incorporating that. It's not just this whole like hardcore cardio yes. and hardcore strength day. It's, mm-hmm. oh, you need a mind-body connection too. Mm-hmm. But before we get too crazy with that, we're going to take a break, grab a beverage to hydrate, use the restroom, do all the things you need to do, maybe a breathing moment. Mm-hmm. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied, and we have kind of a different focus today, and I'm kind of excited because this is literally something I feel like I could talk about forever and I get really passionate about, so I'll try not to, like, keep us all, you know, on the radio for 10 hours, but Sheena, we both have a... I guess an intuition with our clients and, you know, the patrons that I work with, that like a lot of times they don't understand what a mind-body connection is, or maybe like in nutrition, like enjoying food and being intuitive and maybe, you know, understanding when you're full. I guess that's kind of how you look at it.
Yes.
It's just so interesting to me. But what I wanted to do is I kind of want to talk about what mind-body is.
Yes.
And then I kind of want to talk about like what that looks like with exercise, and just specifically, you know, what I do when I'm teaching and what I look at. And I'm not like as far as an expert as I want to be, but I strive to be. So hopefully I can, you know, enlighten all of us. But if you've ever been to the rec center, if you've ever been to a class and you've taken a yoga or a Pilates class, they're typically going to be categorized under a format called mind-body. It's not mind and body, it's mind-body. And that is a connection to where when we're moving the body in space, we are fully aware of what we're doing. So, you know, when you go to the gym and you know, lift your weights and you see some participants in the gym slamming weights around, there's not a connection, like a holistic connection to what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna give you a quick little history lesson. So I teach Pilates, I teach yoga, and I'm curious for our audience members, this is like rhetorical because you can't talk to us, I guess, but you know, in your mind, do you know what the differences of yoga and Pilates are? Do you know what the difference of yoga and Pilates are?
I do not.
Okay.
Yeah, so I need to be enlightened. Like I know, like when I'm in a class, mm-hmm. I feel like some of the movements are, you know, obviously different, mm-hmm. but I think from a very, I guess, information perspective,
yeah.
I'm really kind of ignorant to those things.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because I had a student ask me this week. She came to my yoga class and she was like, "Hey, I have a really stupid question." And I was like, "No." And she's like, "What's Pilates?" And to me, I'm like, that's not a stupid question at all, because the industry, not all of it, but a lot of the industry has made Pilates into this like very strengthening and you're going to tone and you're going to lose weight kind of thing. Pilates actually started with Joseph Pilates. Mm-hmm. And it started, he was born in, I think, 1883, and he's from Germany. And so he was a very innovative person that when he was a child, he was very sick and he had a lot of ailments, and he kind of made it his mission to like be well. He even mm-hmm. wrote a book, Return to Life, explaining, it's really cool to read, explaining like why we should be moving, how culture is changing our posture and tightening muscles, loosening muscles, and it's really the same as now. I think it happened when, probably during the Industrial Revolution, when people started to work more in factories and it wasn't out in the fields and being in sunlight, and so that has a tendency to change your posture, and we know it now because we're at desk all the time.
Right, right.
We're very upper cross, we have tight chest, overstretched back, it messes up the alignment of the spine. Anyway, so Joseph Pilates, he actually, I won't go too much into his childhood history and everything, but he was very active. He trained people. He had a knack for moving people's bodies, and he was way before his time. He would use influences of yoga, which I'll explain that in a second, to create his method called Contrology, which is Pilates. And so he created these exercises that he believed would fix and correct your spine, your posture, and alignment by strengthening your core, which is essentially your abdominals, your obliques, your erector spinae, your transverse abs, which is this inner unit of the body that creates core strength for your spine. So it's so cute. He came over from Germany over to the United States when everybody was migrating over this way, and met his sweet little wife, Clara, who was a nurse, and they opened up shop in New York, and they began to see people privately. And this is when he created the method of like mat exercises that you typically see people do. But he also invented, I think, like 5 or 6 different pieces of equipment that he designed. And so, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to describe what these things are, but one thing that we use at the rec center is called the Universal Reformer, and it's spring tension and pulleys to create resistance so that you can, you know, holistically work the body. And then he created the trapeze table with a tower. There's a Wunda chair. There's a ladder belt. There's like all these pieces of equipment. So not to just bore you guys with a history lesson, this was 100 years ago. And in the industry of Pilates, we have had people that have now created these companies to build and sell this equipment and train people from a lineage of elders so that people like myself can go through a comprehensive training and work with people with these types of exercises.
I love that, you know, and I think, for one, I'm geeking out thinking about the fact of, like, you know, when you think about Pilates and think about why something is named what it is, you know, a lot of times it is named after a person. So could you imagine having,
like,
a set or style of movement that is named after you?
It's like, crazy.
I don't know.
It's so, and so people that look like, go through actual Pilates training and learn it are very like sacred with what it is because it started with Joseph Pilates. And he had no idea, like literally, that all over the world we teach Pilates now. I mean, South Korea teaches it, China teaches it, Germany teaches it. I mean, like it's everywhere you can find a studio. So to kind of backtrack a little bit, we kind of know it started with a man, but there's methods and principles. And so the idea is to strengthen the body, to create more of a holistic approach. So the movements are very core-centered and mobilizing. So like spinal movement. And there's some populations that don't need to do some of the exercises, and your instructor would know all that kind of stuff. But it's very different from yoga. And I'll just kind of briefly talk about yoga for a second. Yoga was created like even further back. It was created over with our friends in the eastern side of the world. And it was created in India for more of a meditation practice. Movement principles that would salute the sun, that focused on waking up in the morning and creating a sun salutation, which we do in yoga. So Joseph Pilates actually took elements of yoga and incorporated it into his system.
That is so cool.
Isn't that cool?
Well, you know, so my question now is, like, what kind of health goals would somebody describe to you where your first thought would be like, oh, they would really benefit from Pilates? So, like, what would be, like, the target audience that would benefit from Pilates? Or it could be a situation where you're like, hey, everybody needs to be doing Pilates, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. Like, everybody should be doing it. We, in the Pilates field, we work with dancers. That's specifically a niche that a lot of instructor dancers have seen a great value because they get injured all the time dancing, and so they don't always work out the correct way, but Pilates targets the type of muscles that they need to be strengthening. But like with my clients, I have people that just need to mobilize their shoulder blades. They have shoulder problems, so they don't understand how to use the muscles in the shoulder girdle to properly move the body. So anybody can do Pilates. And it doesn't mean that you're doing the same format and method. It's tailored to your individual needs. So I don't know. There's a lot more that we can go into, but I think we should probably take a break.
Yeah, no, let's take a break because I know I want to talk with you more about this. We'll, you know, kind of shift over to some intuitive eating too, but y'all go take a stretch, take a breather, go look up some Pilates classes during the break. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Cat.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney, and Sheena's just got me so excited because I'm getting to talk about my favorite things, which is Pilates and movement. And it seems so surface level, but when you really start to understand the history of Pilates, it's really cool.
Well, when you speak about it, I think that what is neat is that there is an obvious reverence that's there from knowing the history. And so I think that that makes you so much better of an instructor, because I think, you know, because you are selling this experience to the client and letting them understand the value, and that you're understanding the science behind it too, versus just going through the movements. So that you're not having that mind-body connection. But I am curious to ask, what kinds of things do you think are the biggest misconceptions about Pilates or even yoga? You know, where people like come in and they just have this like flippant assumption. You're like, dude, that is like not even correct in any kind of way. But I guess I could see why you think that. So what are those, what kind of experiences have you had with that?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because as a movement professional, the way I view Pilates and movement is very differently than what the fitness industry, not the Pilates industry. Pilates industry is pretty grounded because of the people that run it and they work together. But the fitness industry always wants to capitalize on things making you lose weight or get fit. And like when we teach Pilates, we aren't thinking about that at all. Even in yoga, if you're a true practitioner of yoga, it's not booty yoga. It's not the gimmicks. It's like a reverence. Even with yoga, it's a reverence to a culture of people and movement principles that have been going on for, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands of years. I think that a lot of times people think that Pilates is for girls, when in fact it was actually created by a man, Joseph Pilates. And I'm not going to lie that it has, the women have definitely kind of taken over that practice because maybe that we enjoy the movement of it, but a lot of movement on the reformer and the principles that Joseph Pilates taught are very hard. I physically can't do them because I don't have enough strength in my upper body. So Pilates is used for athletes, soccer players, football players. I used to do some training at a studio in Nashville, and they worked with Titans players, and the strength and coordination that they would have to do for these exercises for what they were training for. I mean, a male body is the one that started it, the way the spring tension is. So I think that's a misconception. I also think another misconception is for a yoga class that you have to be super bendy and flexible in order to do yoga. There's so many different formats of yoga. And if you're a true yoga practitioner and instructor, you're going to make it accessible to anybody, because the focus of yoga is the pranayama, which for it just means the breath, and it's all about breath and how we move. And so I could teach a yoga class to sweet little seniors in a chair and then get the benefit, or I can go teach a power yoga class to, you know, football players, and they're going to get the benefit. So I think it's just, unfortunately, I think people like to capitalize on the trendy things and they miss out on like the importance of it.
You know? Like I was thinking goat yoga right now.
Like I couldn't focus. Like I've had some instructors do it and they say it's fun, but like I'm like, I know what I like to get out of my practice, but I don't want a goat like on my back.
That's
so weird.
Well, you mentioned power yoga. So what is the pace of that compared to, I guess, a regular yoga,
like an intermediate type of, you know, power yoga is not going to be for the beginner at all. It's really not going to be for maybe the intermediate. It's more, you're going to be doing a full sun salutation, which puts a lot of like emphasis on the shoulder joints, hip joints. It's longer holds, it's longer planks. It's good though. I mean, it's really good. And if an instructor can teach it safely, and we do that at the rec center, Jordan, one of our instructors, she's amazing, great class. It's just elevated. I teach one of my favorite yoga classes. I teach a gentle yoga class, and I make it my goal to like not stand the whole time. Like we just are going to breathe and stretch, and people actually like it. I thought people wouldn't because they want to come and work out. I've increased participation because they want to like be given the permission to like lay there. It's like cool to do that. But anyway, I don't know. I do think it relates over to the eating part of it as well, because I know in Pilates, it's like you make that one behavior change to start taking care of your body and you feel differently, you start fueling it differently. So I think now's a good time to kind of talk about like intuitive eating and how that looks on your side.
Absolutely. And so, you know, going back to something that you mentioned earlier where you stated that the fitness industry, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, there's kind of this marketing that anything that we do movement-wise has to focus on weight loss. loss.
Exactly.
And so with intuitive eating, one of the things that myself and other practitioners that specialize in this area is really fighting against hashtag diet culture, mm-hmm. which has wanted to use intuitive eating as another trendy way to lose weight, mm-hmm. whereas that is not how it was created right. at all. And it was mm-hmm. actually, it was originally a text that was created in, I think, 1995 by two mm-hmm. registered dietitians. And from that point until now, there have been hundreds of studies to validate the practice of intuitive eating and all of the different principles. And when you look at the data that's out there, the benefits to intuitive eating can include reduced cholesterol, increase positive body image, mm-hmm. you know, other lab markers being reduced. And I like to use that information, especially because it's very data specific, where you might have, like, I've seen somebody on YouTube before that says, like, oh, intuitive eating is, like, so stupid, because mm-hmm. they have this conception that it's this whole, like, you eat what you want whenever you want. Mm-hmm. There's no regards to health. You're mm-hmm. basically just saying, like, oh, you know, if you're craving a cheeseburger, you just eat that all the time. And that's not what intuitive eating yeah. is. It's really just getting back to the basics of, for one, trusting your body,
yeah.
what it's communicating. You know, we were made in a way where our body is very resilient. And I mean, for lack of a better word, intuitive. Mm-hmm. It's going to communicate the nutrients that it needs. Mm-hmm. But we've been sold in this industry of, like, oh, you have to follow our book, or mm-hmm. you have to follow this plan, mm-hmm. that if my body is telling me that it's hungry at 7:30 p.m., I'm saying to my body, no, I'm not going to mm-hmm. feed you. Don't you know I'm intermittent fasting mm-hmm. right now? You know nothing. You're an idiot. And
yeah.
my body's just like, oh, I'm just your body.
Yeah, I'm just trying to tell you what I need.
Yeah, like, I'm just saying, you know.
It's the exact same thing with, and we talked about this last week on the show, like, being kind to your body and, like, gratitude. And that's the thing that yoga teaches us, is we are in a world of, like, you have to do it this way, go, go, go. You have to look a certain way. But, like, yoga is practiced all over the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, us in the West, we do yoga, but we still put our spin on it. You
sure.
know, like, even when I'm teaching a class and I, you know, look out and I've got a very diverse population and I do have some Indian friends that come and take it, it reminds me of where it started and the practice, and everybody's intention is a little different. So I think with yoga, it does help you to say, okay, I get to, like, experience this and slow down, and I give myself permission. It's kind of like with food.
Mm-hmm.
You give yourself permission to eat things, but you're also noticing, like, how your body feels when you mm-hmm. eat them, when you're full, when you're, like, maybe you shouldn't, you know, keep eating. Your body says, hey, I'm kind of full right now. And you're like, oh, okay. Same thing with yoga. Don't
yeah.
go fully into this posture or this pose. Your body is going to restrict and tell you not to because it's not ready. Mm-hmm. So never force into it. It's interesting.
It is. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about the ways that the industry has taken things like Pilates yoga, or maybe intuitive.
I like Pilates. That'd be kind of fun, like yoga and Pilates.
Yes. you know, have done some trendy things with it. And so mm-hmm. I was actually thinking about one of the workout facilities where you do the physical movement in a hot box.
Mm-hmm.
Just out of curiosity, what is your thought on that? I don't know if I've ever asked your professional opinion on, mm-hmm. is this just a trendy thing? Is
yeah.
there anything beneficial to doing certain types of movements
yeah.
in an extremely hot environment?
You know, I would always preface and say it's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're used to it and you've worked your way up, I personally like hot environments,
yeah.
like when I do yoga, because I'm a very cold-natured person, so my body temperature, in order for me to start moving into a yoga practice, I wear a lot of clothes, or I have to have it warmer. So I think it kind of depends on the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the intention of a hot box is to lose weight
yeah.
because it's like you're sweating and all
uh-huh.
that kind of stuff. But, you know, in hot yoga, there's a Bikram yoga. It's a very specific type of yoga traditionally where you're in a hot room, the instructor's putting you through the exercises, you're not allowed to have water, you're kind of depriving yourself of that, because I think it's teaching you a different level of, like, self-realization. I think
yeah.
it has a different mindset behind it. But I think hot spaces are fine. I just don't really recommend them for people because mm-hmm. I just don't know somebody's background. But if it's something that you're used to doing, I think it's fine. I wouldn't necessarily do cardio or anything super vigorous mm-hmm. in that hot space.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't feel very good. You're stressing your body too much. But for a yoga or Pilates practice, having a little bit more warmth, I mean, I think is a good thing.
I appreciate appreciate you sharing that, because again, it goes back to what is the motivation behind
right.
it. So mm-hmm. I love that. Okay, mm-hmm. on that note, let's take a break. Let's hydrate. Let's do all the things. You will catch us on the flip side. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Namaste, everybody. I thought, before I get into asking you a bunch of questions about intuitive eating and mindful eating, because I'm kind of confused on like what they mean, the differences, yeah. and if there are differences, similarities, I thought I would just bring to light like what namaste means, because
please
I know
do.
That like it's kind of trendy, people like to throw it around, but actually it's pretty reverent. It has our friends in India, actually, I believe it's Hindu, and I could be wrong, you could send us a message to correct me, but it just means basically I honor you and I bow to you, and it's a greeting of respect. And so I'm not gonna lie, I'll get a little irritated when I see like a shirt that says namaste in bed, and I'm like, yeah. okay, I get it's funny,
yeah,
but like at the same time, you never know, like you know, the cultural reference behind it. So if you're ever curious and you do take a yoga class and the instructor places their hands at heart center, bows and says namaste, you can respectfully say it back to them, because I know sometimes yeah. in our Western culture we don't know how to respond, and so you just say namaste, and it's just a nice little greeting.
I love that. And you know, it for anyone who has taken a foreign language class, it has always been so interesting to me where there is an intentional use of like formal pronouns yeah. and informal, and really just that sense of respect. And I'm yeah. not saying we don't have that in good old US of A, but just something culturally that
sure.
I appreciate.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
So, yeah.
Okay, Sheena, I have talked so much, and I could talk so much more, but I'm very curious, because this is kind of new to me as well, but like intuitive eating versus mindfulness eating or mindful eating, and
yes.
I'm just curious, are they similar? Are they different? I mean, can you just educate us on this?
Absolutely. So there are certainly some similarities, and I think that, you know, depending on where you're looking, whether it's on social media, websites, whatever, mm-hmm. they are often used interchangeably, but that's not always a correct thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So for one, you know, as far as commonalities, or well, I'll just say with mindful eating specifically in a nutshell, that's really focused on that current eating experience mm-hmm. that you are in. So, you know, just like intuitive eating, you know, you're being mindful of honoring your hunger and your fullness levels, and then being mindful about the food that's in front of you. Whereas with intuitive eating, it does focus on those things, but it kind of goes outside of that mm. as well. So it's really changing what somebody's thought process and attitudes about food are as a whole
mm-hmm.
and like diet culture in general. Intuitive eating explicitly talks about physical activity, whereas mm. with mindful eating, mm-hmm. you know, there's no mention about physical activity. It's not addressed because mm-hmm. it's really talking about the food that's in front of you at the
yeah.
moment. And then also to intuitive eating incorporates a principle called gentle nutrition.
Hmm.
And so the thing about intuitive eating, there's 10 principles to it,
mm-hmm.
and they are ordered in a very intentional way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the very first principle of intuitive eating is getting rid of the diet mentality.
Yeah.
So if somebody is dabbling in intuitive eating and they want to get started, like the very first thing we want to do to rewire mm-hmm. your thought process is you've got to get out of this diet mentality. So that might be the person that feels mm-hmm. like the only way that they've ever been able to exist is if they're going from diet to diet, because they're scared of like, oh, if I'm not following paleo or if I'm not doing Whole30, I don't know how to eat. I'm just going to let myself go.
I feel like that's a really big one to let go.
Yeah,
I mean, especially, I guess that's why it's number one. Like, you have yeah. to change your mindset.
Yeah, basically, like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to follow this, like, prescribed
mm-hmm.
plan. And
mm-hmm.
and that it can probably be one of the biggest hurdles
yeah.
for people to kind of go through. The next principle of intuitive eating is finally getting somebody to honor their hunger.
Mm.
So, you know, somebody, whether they, you know, have an eating disorder or not, if I didn't eat all day, of course I'm going to overeat at dinner.
Yeah.
Like, so if you're being more proactive about your hunger, mm-hmm. you're probably going to eat in a much different way.
Yeah.
And not to go through every single one, but what I will say, though, is that towards the end of the principles, The last ones are actually focused on physical activity and gentle nutrition. Mm. And we do that last because those are the types of things that people can abuse and kind of use in a very punitive way. So gentle nutrition is basically, you know, yes, you can use that knowledge from your dietitian of like, hey, you have high blood pressure running in your family. Mm-hmm. It would be great to choose some, you know, lower sodium foods when you can, or the Mediterranean diet is very heart healthy. So you can use that knowledge and information, but you also have this freedom with food where you don't have these like weird, like food rules that you created for yourself. Like, oh, I can never have X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, let's get rid of like all of the weird mush that you've been thinking in your head about food over time, like all these weird rules.
And it's so warped, you know? It's such a wart. Because I was thinking about this too of like, first of all, I think we should come up with a wellness retreat. And I think you should be in charge of the nutrition, intuitive eating and mindfulness eating classes. And we can have really good food, healthy food. I can lead yoga. Anyway, maybe we should do something like that.
We
I think it'd be kind of awesome.
To do that as like a summer project
I
for
think so.
Like students and faculty staff.
Yeah.
Like just like a mindfulness series.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm geeking out about
I
that
I kind of think that would be fun. Like some type of way. Anyway, you're hearing it happen. So give us some time and we'll try to work it out. But like, you know, it's just, it all plays into it. So like if I start changing my behavior and maybe thinking differently about my food, that could then move over to my exercise habits. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it really all comes down, I think, to lack of education and knowledge and not really understanding things, but it also comes down to our mindset of like how we treat food. Because I guarantee you, if you took a human being from a different part of the world on the other side and you know, did a survey and said, you have this American here, college student, and you have this student from South Korea, like what are your views on food? And it would, and exercise and, you know, weight loss, it would probably be very different.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think, you know, even with one of the principles talking about honoring your hunger, there is one of the principles that's in there that discusses being aware of your fullness levels. So I know that we probably have many listeners that were similar to myself in the way they were raised, where you're part of the clean plate club.
Yeah.
So maybe your only cue to stop eating is the fact that there's no longer food on your plate. And the only level of fullness that you've ever experienced is uncomfortable over fullness.
Yeah.
Or I even have had clients that will tell me that they're so scared of feeling full because maybe their mom said like, oh, if you're full and satisfied, you're going to gain weight. Mm. So I've had clients who have told me that historically they have always eaten just short of the point of fullness where they're actually still a little bit hungry because mom or sister or something in some like magazine said like, oh, you know, diet tip, don't ever eat till the point of being, you know, full and satisfied or you'll gain weight.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so if somebody has only ever heard like maybe their best friend who their only sense of fullness is being like uncomfortably stuffed.
Yeah.
I might say like, oh yeah, I don't want to feel that way. But there's actually this like happy medium of, oh, I just had this last bite that feels comfortable to me. I am satisfied. I'm no longer needing anything. I don't feel like I have to immediately take a nap. Like I am just okay. And like teaching people to check in with themselves in the middle of the meal, experience that mindfulness of, am I satisfied right now? Because an amount of food that gets you satisfied today might look a little bit different tomorrow. Because I think sometimes we can make this assumption of like, oh, I should still be hungry because I haven't eaten as much as I normally do for this same type of meal that I had yesterday. Well, there can be so many different nuances to like what our body needs. And even people recognizing what hunger feels like to them, because I'll have students that say they're so used to ignoring hunger signals. And so, you know, if you think about the sensation of hunger, it's a negative sensation to the body. So if the body used to be good about saying like, hey, Whitney, I'm hungry, but you couldn't eat because you were teaching a Pilates class or whatever else, the body's like, well, I don't want you to feel those pain signals anymore. We'll create some endorphins to mute that. It has to get creative about still communicating to you, hey, I need some nutrition. So it might be, I'm going to make you feel fatigued. I might give you a headache. I might...
Lightheaded.
Inability to concentrate. So a lot of times with intuitive eating, I'll talk to folks about how we can recalibrate how the body is giving those traditional hunger cues.
It's so crazy how similar your practice is to mine, and how really what it comes down to is, as an individual person, you have to only look at you. Mm-hmm. You have to let, this is a yoga thing, we talk about letting go of competition, letting go of judgment, letting go of expectations, because ultimately nobody really, it sounds terrible, and I don't mean this to sound a bad way, but like, if you're doing what you need to do, you're going to benefit, because you're the only, you know, person thinking about your holistic being. You're not worried about your friend, what their influence is on you, whether they're quote unquote skinnier than you, or they have that perfect look. It doesn't really matter, because everybody's created so differently. So that's when you have to, like, that's why it's so important to do these, like, intuitive, eating and yoga, because you learn the importance and give yourself gratitude. And I don't know, I encourage everybody to try a yoga class.
Yeah, I'm like geeking out right now. Like, again, I feel like we could talk on this all day long, but we should probably take a break.
We will.
We have our last segment, but you guys, you'll catch us on the flip side. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back. We are closing out another show, and Sheena and Whitney are geeking out today, because when you give us topics that we know a lot about and we like talking about, it's like you can just keep going and keep talking.
I agree. I feel like we have totally got to bring this topic up again.
I think so.
In a future show. Maybe we'll bring some guests, some folks that practice within, these fields that we geek out about too. We can have like a big love fest.
That would be cool.
On all the things. But, as I was thinking about this last segment, Whitney, I was like, I'm just going to go completely out of the box. We said our piece for the most part on the things that we love. And I might have asked this to you before, but what's your favorite movie? Like, what is your favorite genre of movies? Like, we've kind of had some conversation about, types of shows and things in general, but if you were to name your top three favorite movies or anything in that vein, what would you say?
That's interesting. I can't say that I have an actual favorite movie. It's really weird. I just can't put my finger on a favorite movie, but I will say, in my opinion, what makes a really good movie is it has to have all the things. It's got to have comedy, drama, it has to have a love story, it's got to have some sort of excitement. I am a really big fan of the Back to the Future trilogy.
Good choice.
Just because I feel like it's that classic, trilogy that you're going to bring in all the characters. Michael J. Fox is amazing. They're just lovable. I really, really like... I like trilogies because I like a continuation, but I like an end to it. I love The Matrix because I like Keanu Reeves. So those would probably be my, if someone's you have to sit down and you've got to watch a movie, I'd probably say Back to the Future because I like the lightheartedness. But then I'm going to go a step further and say that my favorite genre of movies that I look forward to, I'm kind of a big Marvel fan, like a geek.
Really? Mm-hmm. I did not know this about you.
I watch all of them. I don't really read the comics, but I'll reference on the internet so I understand things. But I get very excited when a character is born and like a new character, and I'm like, what's their backstory? I have to know what it is. Yeah. So I don't know. What about you?
I like that.
Yeah.
So I would say, If someone were to just point blank say, what's one of your favorite movies? One of the first movies that comes to mind for me is Coming to America.
That's a good one.
With Eddie Murphy. And it's one of those movies because, sometimes when I think about a favorite movie, it's what is something where if, I'm scrolling through the TV and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is on TBS. I can default to this.
Yep.
So Coming to America is like that for me. I feel like Forrest Gump is like that.
That's a good one.
It's long. Uh-huh. Sometimes I have to be in the mood for
it. It's on TBS all the time.
Yes. So something like that. And my husband has recently been rewatching all of the Lord of the Rings movies. And then the directors or extended cut. And I'm like, oh my Lanta.
That's a lot.
I'm like, this one movie was 4 hours with this extended cut. Are you okay?
Do you like Harry Potter?
I do.
You know,
the last set of movies, I did not keep up with as much.
Yeah.
So it was probably, the first, three that I was like, oh, man. And then I kind of, went off the wagon.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's something that I could revisit.
Yeah.
And then I'm always excited when I see... books that I've read.
That's always fun.
Yeah. Kind of see them on the screen. So, yeah. But anyways, but yeah, Coming to America.
That's a good one.
I don't know what it is.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
You know? I like those classics. I like Dumb and Dumber. Those types of, you know, where there's like not a lot of new movies. I'm like, oh, I got to go see it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It shows my age, I guess.
No, and I think working with our students in the office, sometimes I'll make like, you know, pop culture references to things from things like Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
And they're like,
what?
And so I'm glad that stuff like Friends has become relevant
it
again.
Has,
so when I like say things about like Monica and Chandler, I'm like, oh, I don't feel like so fuddy-duddy.
Yeah. You know, so it's kind of interesting change of times. Well, man, what a random show. We went from Pilates to yoga to intuitive eating to Hollywood.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. I mean, who knows what could come next. But you guys, have a fabulous Sunday. You have been listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and Whitney on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.